The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Martha Potter from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State Magazine. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. Today we'll continue our exploration of the January issue of Our State Magazine and pick up where we had to stop last week. I'll finish the last article in the section on North Carolina textile towns entitled It Takes a Mill Village. Next, I'll head over to the House and Home section with an article entitled Riverside Revival about an historic home in Hillsborough. Lastly, as time permits, we'll head to the Food and Feasts section for some mouthwatering good eats. So sit back, relax, and let's get started. It Takes a Mill Village. The South Fork Catawba River brought light and life to early McAddenville, powering machines that provided steady work. Now this former textile town has a new mission, taking care of the river that built it. And the photograph here is a photo of a mill that was built by Colonel R.Y. McAdden. He built his mill in 1881, and he added castle-like turrets in the hopes of making employees feel like royalty. So it's a brick structure with, looks like a sort of a lookout tower and a turret with a pointed and a finial, a point and a finial at the top. So it's quite interesting. A couple of those, actually. They called the invention the light in a bottle. Folks from miles around would hitch up their horses to their buggies, load up the family, and travel to McAddenville at dusk to sit up on a hillside and see the glow of electricity radiating from McAdden Mill's windows, the only light shining through the dark night, save the moon and stars. Thomas Edison had visited McAddenville in 1884, bringing with him his Dynamo No. 31, the 31st model of his water-powered electric generator. The innovation made McAdden Mills one of the first electrically lit mills in the country. Residents of Gaston County gazed in awe at this never-before-seen modern marvel. It was all possible. The lights, the mill machinery running through the night, thanks to the river. Gaston County's topography made it a prime location for building mills during the second half of the 19th century. Its rivers had many shoals where the water dropped. Water power could be easily harnessed. As mills were built, people began flocking to the area for new jobs. Mill owners built housing to accommodate their workers. Each mill village had a school, a company store, and a church, everything workers needed to feed their bodies, minds, and souls without having to leave town. McAdden Mills was built here because of the South Fork Catawba River. Today, the Catawba River Keeper, an organization that seeks to protect the river basin against damage caused by climate change, development, and pollution, has come to town for the same reason. By powering the mill, the river built this town, providing a livelihood for its citizens. Now, the people must return the favor. And some of the couple of the photos on the screen, there's one photo, an inset, that is some folks in either tubing or in kayaks. I think they might be in kayaks going down the Catawba River. And then in the other large photo is Thomas Edison's Dynamo No. 31 on display at Gaston County Museum. Harnessed the power of the South Fork for work. Now the river is used for more leisurely pursuits, as indicated by the photo I just read to you, described to you, the folks on the kayaking there. Okay, on the next page, we have another photo of the of McAddenville became of the river, and looks like a dam. McAddenville became the town it is today thanks in large part to the McAddenville Lake Dam, which powered the mill, and to mill owner Bill Farr, who built a thriving community. And there's a picture of Bill Farr as well. Looks like a portrait. Edison's Dynamo 31 allowed McCadden Mills to operate a second shift and produce cotton yarn and cloth 24 hours a day, 6 days a week. The shifts were 12 hours long, and the work was physical and monotonous, but the pay was steady. Though this life was hard, for many it was preferable to farming, which was unpredictable and even more physically demanding. Plus, mill housing was usually pretty cheap. Eventually, McCadden Mills scaled back to a skeleton crew in the wake of the Great Depression. It was purchased by Stowe Mills, which later evolved into Farr Yarns. And Farr is spelled P-H-A-R-R. Unlike a lot of mill textile owners, W.J. Bill Farr wanted to establish himself as part of the community, and he wanted to better that community. He moved to the center of town. He added indoor plumbing and front porches to the mill houses. He paved the streets, built sidewalks, and installed water and sewer lines. He built churches, a school, and a recreation center with a swimming pool and ball fields. He even created a 15-acre aviary garden. Building a community and taking care of people was as important to him as running the business, says Bill Karstarfin, his grandson. Daniel Rankin has fond memories of growing up in this tight-knit small town. There was just never any need to go anywhere because just about everything you needed was here in McCaddenville, he says. There was the Farr Yarns Reds, the company's softball team that won the major industrial slow pitch championship 6 times in the 60s and 70s. The Reds were good, Rankin said. They hit home runs all night long. Farr would hire college baseball players to work at the dye plant in the summer and play on the company team, and nearly everybody in town went to the games a couple of times a week. Kids like Rankin would keep score, hanging the numbers on a scoreboard right in right field. They were paid for their labor with a hot dog and a drink from Ty Donaldson, who ran the concession stand. Rankin pulls up his trouser leg to show a scar on his knee from running smack into another kid during a race to home plate. Donaldson patched it up for him, he says. Folks in town just looked after one another. There were also the 4th of July company picnics when Farr would bring in professional entertainment like country comedian Jerry Clower. There were barbecue and games like climb the greasy pole and catch the pig and egg tosses. On the Friday before the picnic, there was a beauty contest at the swimming pool. Rankin remembers doing formations in the pool with the other kids. When asked about how people felt about living and working in McCaddenville, Karstarfin pauses, looks down for a moment, and looks back up with a glisten in his eye. If you talk to some of the old-timers, they'll tell you there isn't a better place they could have lived. And they look back on growing up here in McCaddenville as one of the most special times of their lives. Bill Farr did everything that he could possibly do to make sure the quality of life here was the best it could be. Farr passed on his commitment to taking care of people and places to his grandson, now president and CEO of Farr McCaddenville Corporation, which has evolved from Farr Yarns. Although Karstarfin sold the textile business in 2020 and now focuses on the hospitality and development arms of the company, he continues to make the town an attractive place to be. He is currently renovating Mill No. 3, one of the original brick mill buildings on Main Street, into a multi-use building that will house an event space, a food hall, and a tap room. From the back windows of Mill No. 3, you can see a portion of the Carolina Thread Trail, a network that, when completed, will include 1,600 miles of trails in 15 counties around Charlotte. This section will run from Spencer Mountain to Lake Wylie through McCaddenville along the South Fork of the Catawba River. Karstarfin has been a staunch supporter of the Carolina Thread Trail since its inception, and he hopes it will attract hikers and cyclists to the town. He's also partnered with the Catawba Lands Conservancy to preserve several hundred acres along the South Fork. I love the land, and I love taking care of the land, he says. Growing up here in McCaddenville, I spent a lot of my free time in the creeks and the woods along the river. I have a love of nature and will try to do my best to protect it. At the Catawba Riverkeeper headquarters in one of the old Stowe Mills, Far Yarns buildings, Executive Director John Searby stands in the classroom used for public educational events. He's looking at an artist rendering of the Catawba Watery River Basin that's been carved out of metal and mounted on reclaimed wood. He points to the headwaters just outside of Black Mountain. He traces the river to Linville Gorge and Pisgah National Forest, Lake Norman, the largest man-made lake, freshwater lake in North Carolina, the South Fork, the largest tributary to the Catawba, and on down into South Carolina. And there's a picture on this page of this, an artist's rendering of the Catawba Watery River Basin carved out of metal. There's also a picture of John Searby on the page. And in the page before that, there's a sort of a scene of a bridge and a pedestrian walkway over a tranquil pond, it looks like. And it's just reflective of how Bill Karstafen hopes to make the communities among the South Fork a pleasant place to live, just like his father and grandfather did. Between 26 counties and the two states, the Catawba Riverkeeper oversees about 8,900 miles of creeks, rivers, and streams along a 5,000-square-mile river basin. Along its path, the Catawba River generates more electricity per mile than any other in the country, earning it a reputation as the hardest-working river in the United States. And Searby and his team are working hard to protect it. They seek to improve stormwater management in an effort to reduce flooding, which erodes the riverbanks. They plant willows to stabilize the shoreline. They ensure that industries adhere to their permits and urge lawmakers to require new technology that will reduce pollution. Above all, they advocate for the river and educate the public on how they can do so as well. Next to the classroom is the River Room, the Catawba Riverkeeper's tap room, which serves rotating drafts made by the 96 breweries that source their water from the basin. Every person who comes through the door of the River Room to drink a beer receives a brief lesson in the organization's mission to preserve, protect, and restore the waters of the basin for all people. The River Room is part of the latest chapter in the organization's development in which Searby and his team are making efforts to be more connected with the community, hear people's concerns, and support protection of the river through increased engagement. When Searby came on board as executive director in 2019, the Catawba Riverkeeper's offices were in Uptown Charlotte, very far from the river. Searby knew that the organization needed to be based closer to the water. A mutual friend introduced him to Karstafen, who was considering developing his Dynamo 31 building, a former mill building right on the banks of the South Fork. Searby knew that Karstafen partnered with the developers on new building projects that could potentially have a negative impact on the river basin. Searby told Karstafen, "If we go down this path, I will never sacrifice the mission of the Catawba Riverkeeper because you're our landlord." But after learning about Karstafen's commitment to the environment and to the river, Searby was convinced the Far McAdenville Corporation would be a good fit. Bill doesn't go into very many projects in the region now without coming and saying, "Hey, let me pick your brain about something," Searby says. "That's very gratifying." After launching near the McAdenville Dam that once powered McAdden Mills, Searby kayaks southeast on the South Fork toward Cramerton. As he paddles, a beaver pokes its head above the surface and then dives back under. Red-eared and yellow-bellied sliders sun themselves on logs, slipping into the water when they hear the soft splash of a paddle. Great blue herons take flight, gliding low over the gently flowing water. Upon moving to its new location, the Riverkeeper opened the River Room, which was shortly followed by two more retail businesses. Confluence, an arts, music, and recreation center in nearby Cramerton that rents recreational equipment, including bikes that people can ride on riverside trails, and a kayak rental location at Far Yarn's old company greenhouse. The Riverkeeper also offers eco-tours and organizes volunteer trash cleanups in the basin. Searby knows that the more that people get out on the water, the more engaged they will be with protecting it. Activities like this are part of a perspective that has changed significantly since Rankin's childhood during the early days of Far Yarns, when many parents wouldn't let their children play in the river because it was deemed too dangerous. At the time, although the Southport Fort provided so much opportunity to the town didn't think much about the river. The rivers truly have been the lungs that make our community here in Gaston County breathe, Karstarfin says. For years, a lot of textile companies used the river as a way to get rid of their waste, and everybody sort of turned their backs on it. But today, we see the river as a tremendous asset. As the Riverkeeper and its volunteers continue to advocate for and work to protect the river will continue to take care of the town. Its peaceful waters will lure people to live, work, and play in McAdenville, and will bring tourists to dine and shop on Main Street after a day on the water. As it has done for this town for more than 150 years, the river will always provide. For more information on the Catawba Riverkeeper, visit catawbariverkeeper.org. And on this page, there's an inset. On the South Fork Catawba River in McAdenville, kayakers launch near the J.M. Karstarfin Bridge, named for Bill's father, a former Far Yarn CEO. And on the previous page, which I had had to turn past, it says, at the River Room Tap Room and Confluence, a space for art, music, and recreation, the Catawba Riverkeeper encourages people to enjoy every aspect of the South Fork Catawba River. And it has a picture of the storefront of Confluence, that arts and music location, and then an inside picture of some beer taps and a poured beer with a bartender in the background displayed there. All right. Let's head over to the House and Home section with an article entitled Riverside Revival. It's about a historic home in Hillsboro. The article is entitled Riverside Revival. A sprawling 19th century estate near the Eno River tells the story of some of Orange County's early residents and their federal-style flair. For 15 years, the Scottish immigrant merchant William Kirkland, his wife Margaret, and their 14 children watched as their dream home took shape. They could see the progression of the Air Mount estate through the windows of a small house on the same Hillsboro property. Construction had begun in 1799, funded by the success of Kirkland's nearby general store. The estate, named for his Scottish hometown, Ayrshire, was among the region's first sizable brick residences. Joseph Beatty, a local historian who studies Air Mount's significance, explains why the location of Kirkland's general store and estate were a strategic choice. They were both stops on the great trading path, also known as the superhighway of the time, Beatty says. Originally forged by Native Americans, the path connected the Chesapeake Bay area to indigenous settlements across the Carolinas and Georgia. Hillsboro was considered the capital of the backcountry, Beatty says. You could step down here and get just about everywhere. The two photos on this page, one, an 1815 portrait of William Kirkland, hangs over the mantle. When the mantle, there's a photo of the mantle as well, built by renowned craftsman Elhanan Nutt in the formal dining room of Air Mount, Kirkland's estate. The mantle is actually very beautiful. It looks like there's outside the actual fireplace, so there's brass andirons. And then there's looks like a marble surround around the opening of the fireplace. And I don't know if the mantle itself is marble or alabaster. I don't know. It's beautiful, though. It's got different carvings in there, and it's a very beautiful mantelpiece. The house itself is looks federal style in that it has the centered, not a porch per se, but just an entryway, a tiny porch leading to the front. But everything's very symmetrical. Two wings that are lower than the main part of the house. The main house is two stories, and the wings look like they're just one story each. Red brick front with symmetrical brick fireplaces, one on either side of the main center part of the house, and one fireplace on each side of the wings with manicured lawn. It's the pictures at fall, so there's beautiful fall color in that. So Kirkland's store stocked goods like rum, coffee, and hardware, but it was the demand for his high-end supplies like silver and fine china that funded Air Mount's striking features. Three stories, 13-foot ceilings, and elaborate woodwork and plastered details. When it was eventually completed around 1815, the Federal-style masterpiece was hailed as one of the Piedmont's finest homes. Today, public tours of Air Mount shed light on the enslaved craftspeople who, by hand, formed and fired each of the property's several hundred thousand bricks. As tour guide Angie Kelly walks with visitors around to the back of the house, she reveals the maker's fingerprints on a few of those exterior bricks. And there's a photograph of one of those bricks with a fingerprint. Moving inside the home, she encourages people to step into footprint indentations in the hardwood floor. The grooves were worn down by years of enslaved housekeepers' steps from the detached kitchen to the warming room, where food was kept by the fire until it was served in the dining room. On her tours, Kelly calls guests' attention to the Empire and Federal-style furniture, which was used by the four Kirkland generations who lived in the house from 1815 until 1985. Much like the goods that changed hands on the property's trading route, Air Mount passed from one generation to the next until 1985, when the widow of Sam Kirkland sold the home to Richard Jenrett. A North Carolina native, Jenrett recognized the value of historic preservation and restored the home to its original grandeur. He then created the Classical American Homes Preservation Trust, to which he gifted Air Mount and all of the surrounding property. The estate is a narrative of our state's early history. On the property, we have archaeological evidence of of Native people, and Kirkland himself represents the immigrant experience. Even the name Air Mount points to new beginnings. Instead of naming it Ayrshire, like we see in a lot of instances, Kirkland incorporated its position on the promontory of the Eno River into the name. It's his little mount, a nod to the past while acknowledging the start of something new. And in this, you see also a couple of photos from inside with very high chair rail, probably about 5 feet high from the chair rails that high up. And it's blue on the bottom, and then the upper moving up to the ceiling is white. Looking forward down a hallway that is a parquet floor that is really, really quite beautiful with insets of light-colored wood and then darker, two other darker woods. Looking down the hallway into perhaps a sitting room, there's an alabaster statue in front of a window. You can see part of that. And then the dining room, and there's a seating bench in there, and with period furnishings arranged very nicely with china on the table and so forth. For more information about Air Mount, you can go to classicamericanhomes.org/sites/Air Mount. And Air Mount is spelled AYR-MOUNT. It's on St. Mary's Road in Hillsboro. And I've actually been there. I've not toured the home, but I've seen the outside of the property. It's very nice. Another article in the House and Home section is a business in North Wilkesboro. This article is entitled Color Theory. At a vibrant gallery in Wilkes County, two friends showcase an ever-changing collection of art in every hue. In 1954, at his elementary school in Miller's Creek, Jim Lyall's first grade teacher drew a beautiful autumn landscape with orange and yellow and red chalk on the classroom blackboard. "The bright colors enthralled me," Lyall recalls. "That's when I knew I wanted art in my life." Inspired by the childhood memory, Lyall took art classes to foster his creativity and later studied graphic design at East Tennessee State University. 2 decades later, after retiring from a 19-year career in corporate design, he started an interior design company in his native Wilkes County. He knew he would need artwork for his projects, so he quickly enlisted the help of his friend Steve Key, an owner of a local cattle farm with a love for art and travel, to find pieces that would impress his clients. Their treasure hunts led them to artist studios throughout the mountains, and in 2010 they co-founded Taupe Gallery in North Wilkesboro as a place to share their finds. "We wanted to bring something new to Wilkes County by showcasing contemporary, colorful, and edgy pieces that are a tad less traditional," Lyall says. "Abstract paintings in yellows and greens, potteries in bright blues, and whimsical glassware in purples, oranges, and reds." Taupe Gallery displays the same riot of color that fueled Lyall's passion all those years ago. Housed in an historic building, the gallery, ironically named for the gray-brown walls, chosen to serve as a versatile backdrop that doesn't detract from the art, features the work of more than 125 artists from around the country, 75% of whom are based in Western North Carolina. It's the ever-changing gallery that the two friends envisioned, one where color and all its kaleidoscopic wonders remains the constant. For more information about Taupe Gallery, check out their website, taupegallery.com. The photos here are Lyall and Key's collection, include the works of Asheville artists, and a painting by Cindy Walton, sort of an abstract painting, and some bowls that look very creative, and some stackable art. And there's the pictures of the two, Jim Lyall and Steve Key. Well, there's the music. We're winding down this episode of the Our State Magazine. Appreciate your attention. So I hope you've enjoyed it, and we'll be sure to listen in next time. I'm Martha Potter, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.